Hello, everyone. I am so excited to be back for another episode of Safe Space, the ABA podcast. My name is Michelle Zeman. Be sure to listen in for those two code words so that way you can get your free CEUs. I am beyond excited to talk to this guest in particular. She's somebody that I have actually consulted with on organization before, and also just about work-life balance and about, executive functioning in general. So I'm really excited to introduce Megan from the Organized Analyst onto the podcast. Welcome, Megan.
Hi, welcome. Hi, everybody. I'm so excited to be here and be chatting with you, Michelle, and diving into our topic. This has been like the highlight of my calendar this week to be looking forward to.
Oh, that's so sweet. I love that so much. Oh my goodness. Well, let's get started. First, most importantly, what got you here? How did you get to become a BCBA?
I feel like my story is similar to so many people. I like randomly found ABA. I went to undergrad in Wilmington, North Carolina for recreation therapy, which a lot of people have never even heard of. It's not like a huge field. And it's kind of using like play and different like leisure life skills to help teach just different types of skills. So lots of different things. And I started in that. I ended up interning and working in an inpatient psych unit for kids right out of college. And I have always wanted to work with kids. I was super fortunate in high school to be in a service learning class, and part of our class was volunteering in different locations. And I worked at a special needs summer camp in the summer, and then I got to work at that same school in their preschool classrooms during my entire senior year of college or of high school. So I found rec therapy, and then I was like, okay, well, inpatient psych is really intense. It needs a lot of reform. So I found like the dark side of that really quickly, and realized little old like 22-year-old Megan was not going to be able to fix an entire like years built system that was not working. So I stumbled into like jobs with individuals with autism, because those were my favorite clients to work with when I got to volunteer. I really connected with my autistic clients and like just loved them, and I felt like we were buds. So I stumbled into ABA through Google search and started as an RBT, worked my way up to being a BCBA, and then kind of developed my business, the Organized Analyst, through like all my experiences with becoming a new BCBA and like learning and growing in that.
Yeah. And how long have you been a BCBA for, just to kind of get an idea?
I'm in my fifth year now. So I was back in like the sit and take a test and wait days where you had to like sign up for a window. I always say like the old days when that happened. So I'm in my fifth year now, which feels crazy.
Yeah. By the way, facts on the olden days of sitting and waiting for, the test to come back.
Like, and I was in the November testing group. So it was like Christmas, and you were like, do I keep studying? Or is that a curse to say, like, if I keep studying, I think I'm going to fail. It was the worst like waiting period of my life. And then the website crashes because everyone and their brother is trying to check their results.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And that's just where it's like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Am I going to pass? Am I going to fail? Like, it's a whole thing. Like, anxiety literally just
100%.
Oh my goodness. Well, you've been a BCBA for 5 years. And, one thing that we've talked a lot about is, work-life balance, because being a BCBA respectfully is, and I don't know if you get offended if I curse.
It's hard really, shit.
Okay. Yeah. It's really fucking hard. It is hard being a BCBA. So that being said, how do you personally maintain a healthy work-life balance while working as a BCBA?
Yeah, it's really hard. I don't want to like sugarcoat it. And in the last 3 years, really, I took a huge turn in my work-life balance. And I think part of that is just the mindset with it, which I know everyone talks about mindset, but just even the phrasing work-life balance sets us up for failure. Because it's impossible. Like, your work and your life will never be 50-50 balanced, like, ever, because it ebbs and it flows. So I came across, I don't even remember where I learned about it, the concept of, like, work-life flow instead, because there's going to be times where work is really intense, and there's going to be times where your personal life is really intense. So trying to find flow and kind of like just going through those highs and lows, I felt was a way better view for me than trying to balance everything out, because it was like this never-ending game of like holding 17 plates in the air. So I feel like when I switched that mindset, it helped me put the pressure off of trying to be perfect with it, because I can definitely lead towards like type A perfectionist tendencies. And there was like this pressure of like, I have to be great at both. And there's moments where I'm not great at both still to this day. So, and I think it's really personal. What's going to feel more like a more balanced flow to me might be super different from you or from my coworkers. So I think it's really, I used to be super work centered, like my entire life. And I think a lot of new BCBAs do this. You put in so much work and effort to take the test, to pass the exam, that it becomes your personality for a while. Especially when you enter this field, you get close with, and most of the people you end up becoming friends with are also in this field, because nobody gets it like the people who get it.
Nobody does.
And you just like live and breathe ABA for a while. And I realized that's not what I want my life to be. I want to be more than just Megan, the BCBA. And having that shift in it, my identity, if it's just a part of me, helped a lot. And then I realized I could focus it on three areas. Like, three things for me really helped me solidify what I needed in that flow, which was like my values. I think is super important. If you're like an ACT person, you know all about the values. Yep. I worked with an ACT mentor, and looking at like what's important to me in my life, what do I want it to look like, and what really fills me up helped to ground me in what I was not only looking for in my life, but in my job. And then taking just the little joys that align with my values and making sure I'm adding those in regularly. I found it was really easy when I started to feel overwhelmed and stressed at work to like pull back on everything and be like, I'm coming home, I just want to decompress and do nothing. And I realized that wasn't making me feel better. I was like, and I don't even know like the best way to explain that. It's like you're trying to escape the feelings that you're feeling and the stress of work by not feeling. And that didn't make me feel better or add anything in to like combat that. So I started adding in things that made me happy. Like, joy is one of my huge values, and like building little joys into my day, even if it was like something silly. Like I got a new pen and I used a purple pen today, or like super little things that just made me happy. Focusing on adding as much joy back into my day, I felt balanced the stress or like the joy suck of sometimes work. For like, not the best way to say it, but sometimes work was a joy suck for me, and adding in joy versus adding in nothing and just staying at that low level helped. And then the last thing, which felt counterintuitive, was adding more to my plate of growth. I found that being a BCBA felt plateau by the end of my first year, that I didn't want to become a clinic director. I knew that. I thought maybe like nonprofit or business at the very beginning. And then I realized I'm not growing. Like, I'm not working towards anything. Most of us have spent our entire lives up until this point trying to achieve the next step. And for me, there was no next step. And I felt like I didn't have a purpose almost anymore of like something to work towards. So adding in growth or like specialization in my business helped me find that like spark of working in the field again. And I realized those three things, when they started to miss out, the values, the joys, and like a growth opportunity, that's when my burnout like rapidly would start decreasing. It was really fast and it would just like hit an all-time high because they all just kept piling in on top of each other.
I'm really like really happy to hear this, you know, just because on my end, you know, I work with a lot of different BCBAs. I work with a lot of candidates that are going for BCBA and, you know, the BCBA exam, and just, you know, working towards those unrestricted hours, you know, like it's really difficult and, you know, for them to be able to keep up with that. And yet also having to deal with that, like balance of the caseload and balance of what they need to do. And I really hope that BCBA candidates that are listening to this can truly understand, like, you know, you only have your own self. You only have one life, you know. Don't make this career be your personality just because you are trying to become a BCBA someday.
Yeah, you know? It's a huge identity crisis, I feel like, as a new BCBA that nobody talks about.
Yeah.
And that just like, when you do get to that point and that's become your everything, you're on a bad road already. And it just leads to like worse and worse problems super easily.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, one of the things that I've been teaching is advocacy, you know, like not just with our clients, but with ourselves, because we tend to put ourselves last.
100%.
Yeah. We put everyone else first. We put our clients first. We put our techs first. We put everybody first, but we're on the back burner because we're so busy pouring into everybody else.
And we've been reinforced that way. I really do think it goes along with like general healthcare professionals. I think you and I talked about this before. It's like this martyrdom of we're, especially females, we are taught from a very young age, giving to others is how you're valuable. And it's the impact you can make. And it's good to put yourself last. And then we get to this point and we're like, why are we all crying at work every day? This is why. This is why.
Very that, you know, I feel like honestly, like with the pandemic happening, that sort of actually got a little bit worse. I don't know about you, but like when I started working from home more, which I actually, believe it or not, worked out of the home during the pandemic.
I did too a little bit.
Yeah, you know. And
probably
so,
when we shouldn't have been, but here we are.
Yeah, very that. Welcome to Florida where the pandemic, forget about that. I started working remote more so in like 2022. And I feel like, and I don't know if you experienced this, but everywhere I went was work. Even like sitting in my kitchen table is a work office.
Sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
I feel like I had that almost opposite effect. When I first got hired as a BCBA, I worked at a small BCBA owned private company. And that was what my coworkers looked like. So like that was my first experience as a BCBA working with other BCBAs. I think a lot of them were truly workaholics, and that was the like gold standard, everyone's favorite word, of my coworkers. It was like, we're excited about car desks because then we can work in between driving to in-home clients. We're like putting up on a pedestal, working till 8 p.m. at night. And I'm so like fortunate and blessed with myself that I had some foresight to be like, y'all are crazy, like to not drink the Kool-Aid, because I was like, what is wrong with you people? But I could see being in that spot and other people being in those same shoes, being like, this is how it is. This is what we do. Learning from my environment. This is what gets reinforced. And when I hit the pandemic, we shut down for a while because naturally, like everybody else did, it spread really fast through our company because we were in home and it was like one sub shift and like half my cases got knocked out. So we had that like 2-week shutdown. And for me, I think it almost was like a reawakening of, I need to put my life in different priorities because I have a taste of more time freedom and I don't want to go back to like work, this being my entire life. So although it was like a horrible time in our country, I'm really grateful for what I got to like learn and experience during the pandemic.
That is really awesome that you were able to like pick up on that, during the pandemic. And it's funny you mentioned like the work being the gold standard. Part of the issue I have seen with it is the need to meet productivity,
Oh,
billable
yes.
hour requirements. Let me tell you how much of a pain in the fucking ass it is to be told you're under hours.
Oh,
Oh,
yes.
again.
Please tell me what letter and number battleship I am on your spreadsheet.
Very that. Very that. And and the worst part is like those numbers, they end up being punishers for a lot
Yeah,
of us.
100%.
Like I remember getting emails from, from one of the people that I work with of a breakdown of all the billable hours. And I'm like, I don't want to talk to anyone about this. Like, this is
It's
not
that's
it.
that was like I think the day I realized I did not want to be a clinic director. One, I don't think I'm too much of a wild card, I feel like, because I'm gonna tell them what's going on, and I don't think that my company wanted me in that much of a power position. Because I agree. I remember sitting in my boss's office, and I knew my boss didn't want to be having the conversation about with it with me about it, but I knew it was being bru like her neck was being breathed on about like you need to have this conversation. And I remember being like, and I teach this in like some of my workshops and when I work with my one-on-ones, how unrealistic our expectations are of people's productivity and how one against science it is, because it doesn't make any sense when you look at like research on productivity.
Yeah.
And it like makes me want to like shake somebody, because I'm like, this is the exact opposite of every single one of these companies' social media sites and values listed about how much they care about companies and how compassionate they are and their buzzword work-life balance. Because I'm like, you don't do that for your own employees. And I know that firsthand because I've worked here. So all of your marketing is propaganda at this point.
Very true. I mean, I literally worked at a company that would praise or basically shove the words work-life balance and mental health support. But then in the same sentence, they would say, if you don't meet your 30 billable hour requirement, we're going to take that into your PTO. And it's like, no. Like, first of all, how can you sit there and try to take away PTO when non-billable work is still work,
And
one?
it's like a good, if you're doing good work, you should have a lot of non-billable work. I'm gonna
Exactly.
say it.
Very that. Very that. And number two, even aside from that as well, there's this thing of like hustle culture, like we were talking
Oh,
about a little
yeah.
bit before, and it's like, oh, we gotta hustle for these billable hours. We gotta get more so that way we can get our, meet our productivity levels. You're not like there's nothing good about it. There is
No.
nothing good about it.
And it's crazy that companies don't understand this, because, and we wonder why burnout is so prevalent, right? Why everybody and their brother is saying they're feeling burnt out and at earlier and earlier stages of their careers. And just in the 5 years I've been a BCBA, in my 5th year now, it's worse. It's worse now, like just the environment we work in than when I started. So I'm like, the poor like next groups coming up are coming into like unrealistic expectations. And I've sat down and been like, let's do the math together, okay? Like, let's Blue's Clues it right now, because what you're asking of me is ridiculous. And I have that conversation all the time. I do like a interviewing CEU, and one of the number one questions I get is about billable hours. And I'm like, if we can throw billable hours out the window, our field is going to do so much better. Because if that's all you're worried about, your client outcomes and the experience of your staff and of you as a BCBA and your clients will all improve, because there's so much more that goes into work and into the role doing it well than just your time. And I'm sorry, I'd rather have a lower caseload, but give me more face-to-face time with my staff. Give me more time to put in on training and doing these non-billable tasks on my admin side, because that's what's going to make a good program, and that's what's going to make your team feel supported. It's not how many things can you jam pack in your schedule. Because I remember having a company tell me, you don't have anything on your schedule to equate to 40 hours a week, so I'm going to make you cover this client as a sub shift because their BT called out. And I was like, I'm sorry, when did we get to the point that we need to micromanage a calendar that I need to put on every single task I need to work on? I'm guaranteeing those of you who work in corporate don't work 8 hours straight without a break. You're taking a lunch break. You're going to the bathroom. Heaven forbid I pee twice a day. True. It's like there's so many things that we do and that normal workers do where there are downtimes, and we're just going to decide that we forget that those exist because we want to meet a billable hour. It's like, no.
Right. Exactly. And let's talk about how ethics drives into this.
So much. And I feel like this is going to be a super unpopular opinion, and it's just me. So it might just be me, but I'm probably going to get some heat for this. We need to stop multitasking. And I say that in the nicest way possible.
Yeah.
If you are supervising your BT and you're with your client, do not make materials. Like, I get BCBAs. That's might be the circumstances you work for. Your company doesn't want to pay you for your time outside of sessions. They only want to pay for your billable time, which is, I'm not the master of legalities, but pretty sure that's not sus. It's a little sus. If you're working, you should be paid. So it's like two birds, one stone shouldn't be something that takes away from somebody else. So I might walk while I'm like reviewing data or something, or I might have a phone call with a parent while I'm walking around outside, probably not while I'm eating lunch, though it has happened. But I don't like things like that where you're like, okay, I feel like I have no time to get anything done because I have too much on my workload. So I'm going to sit in my supervision with my laminator and I'm going to cut out stimuli for my kid. No, like, that stuff you need to do, yes. And if you can't do it outside of session times, your caseload is too big. And that's a whole different argument you need to have with your company. Because if you are using your time to do stuff like that, you're not giving your support and your time to your staff and your kids. And I think that's where it starts to get unethical. You're not providing the experience that you should be providing. And it's going to trickle down to subpar services. And the same thing of if you're caseload is so huge, you're only seeing your staff like maybe 5%, you never see your kids, you're in the same ethical boat of you can't really give what you need to give to these families, and you shouldn't be taking them on, and companies should stop asking you to. Because I think that's where it starts to get hairy, is you say no and they say too bad.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the heck do I do at that point, where I know it's an ethical no-no and my company is saying you owe me this. And it's like, oh, gosh.
Exactly. I remember personally speaking with a couple people, and I actually made the recommendation that we don't take them on because we did not have the staff to assist. And I got my ass handed to me because I said, we are not accepting this client. And the thing is, I would do it again and again.
Because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. If we do not have the staff to support, then how can I ethically take on a client? I mean, it's literally in our code of ethics to provide effective treatment that we prioritize clients' rights and needs in service delivery. And unfortunately, a lot of non-BCBA-owned companies do not understand that. It's like, we're not sitting here and we're not just rejecting just because we don't like a kid.
Yeah, we're not being petty. It's not pettiness. It's like a literal rule we have to follow. You might not be bound by the ethics code, but we are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. My code goes above your
business model. Yeah.
Business model. Exactly. Exactly. You know, and that's just it. Like, we have to make sure that we're doing no harm. We have to make sure that we're practicing within our scope. Practicing within a defined role. By the way, all of which is in our code of ethics, you know? So it's like when you have all of those competing factors and you're just taking on and continuing that, it leads to burnout, you
Yeah, and
know?
it's that dilemma of, it's a morality issue. I feel like besides just the ethics, I know for me that's what it was. I was so unhappy, and I was like, I'm being forced to make decisions, or attempted to be forced to make decisions I refuse to make. And that's where I was like, this is against what I believe I should be doing, and I can't. Like, that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. I was like, I can't do this. It's one thing to be like, oh, I think you should recommend 5 more hours. Like, I have a whole ordeal with like hours recommendations that companies want you to make in general. But I was like, you can't force me to make a clinical recommendation I don't agree with. And that's where I will 100% draw the line at any company I ever work for.
Oh yeah, I've worked at a company that actually asked, and actually not asked me. They told me that I should increase my clinical recommendation for a client because the client wants 25 hours a week. And that's what the client's parent had
Well, I
said.
want 120K, so can we make that
Yeah, can I
happen?
have $1 billion? Like put it in my bank account and then, you know, who knows? You know,
Yeah.
so it's like the trade-off here. We're not babysitters. We're not, you know, here to just babysit your kid and not do anything. We have a
It's a
fucking
medical
code
practice. Yeah. We
to Yeah.
forget that it's an actual science, it's an actual practice. Because a lot of our field is ran by business owners. They're not it, and that's a whole different ball game. That, newsflash, none of us are business people. Like, we didn't go to school for any of that. So we're in this weird environment that easily takes advantage of all of us.
Exactly. And I feel like that also really contributes to burnout as a whole. And, you know, especially like, I don't know about you, but for me, autonomy really matters. Having autonomy as a BCBA truly matters. And that being said, coming from your experience, how much autonomy do you feel that you have in your role as a BCBA? And how do you navigate that within organizational structures?
It's depends on where you work, for sure. Like, I have found, and I had a friend who told me this when I started early out in my career as a BCBA. I think there's a time and a place for each company that you work for based on your level of autonomy, if that like makes sense. So like, when I was brand new, I had way too much autonomy, I kind of think. I worked for a company that had like no like standards of practice. So like, there was no procedure for most things. It was like, you make it up. Not like procedure, like ABA procedure, but like how to do your job procedures. So like, those SOPs didn't exist. And being brand new, like, I was like, give me a task analysis, please, of how to do this job, because there's so many steps to it. And it was all I new to me, because I worked for a different company as an RBT, and they, bless my little baby BCBA heart, I was like, I'm gonna stay here, I'm gonna become a BCBA here, I love it here. And they were like, you're almost done with your hours, we don't have BCBA positions available. And I like crumbled, and my heart broke, and I had to find somewhere else to go. So I ended up at a company. I luckily like did the whole RBT thing while I was waiting to find out about if I passed my exam. So I got to learn the ins and outs. But once I became a BCBA, I didn't know in depth the structure of their company. Like, I didn't know how they really ran things, and I was drowning. And looking back, I wish I was at somewhere that had more of an organizational structure, because it would have had more supports in place. Hopefully, you think.
You
But
think so?
that's not always the case. To
Right.
then going to a more structured organization right after that, in my like end of first year, second year, gave me a platform to like jump off of. And then I
Yeah.
got to that point later in my career where I was like, now I'm in a box. It's too small for how I've grown. I need somewhere with more autonomy, because I developed my own clinical like mindset and beliefs, and really honed in on my science, that I realized like, you're limiting what I can do with my clients or in the field because of the rules and regulations you've put in place unrelated to ABA. So I think it depends on what you need, because I wish I would have started at a more structured place younger and then had the reverse now where I work part-time now, which if people can swing it and they can figure out how to do it like financially or even benefit wise, that was my big holdup. I needed to have benefits because I was the insurance holder for my family. And so I was stuck in that full-time mode and it was like eating away at my soul. So my husband was able to pick up benefits at his company and it gave me the flexibility to do my business full-time and then to decide I wanted to go back part-time. And that was a game changer for my autonomy. Being a part-time worker has given me more flexibility to say, yes, I want to take this case on. No, I don't want to. I'm at capacity, versus when I was full-time and salary, I was told when I was at capacity and it wasn't a conversation. So finding, if you can find a company who's going to have that conversation with you and be able to be flexible, I think that's what we all really hope for. Those are those unicorn companies we want, because caseloads aren't one size fits all. Every single one of us has a different capacity for what we can manage. And I like to say that each case that we have not only has that like billable time requirement and it's got the admin time requirement, but it's got an emotional capacity requirement. And there are some cases that you might have four kids on your caseload. I know at one time I was like, I only have four kids, but three of my four kids are intense cases. They're a huge like emotional burden. They're a physical burden. And I love all my cases, but a really easy like by the book case and like a super complex case have different weights. It's like kind of like the spoon theory. Like the spoons are not equal just because it's a kid. Even if it's a kid with 15 hours, the parents have different needs, the staff have different needs. And I think companies forget that there are different factors that go into these things and they try to just make it nice and neat and tidy. And then they don't want to individualize, which we know is how it works. Like we individualize for our clients. Why did we stop individualizing for us? Because it's harder. Yeah, it's harder. But if you want people to stay at your company more than 2 years a year, maybe you got to switch things up.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned, you know, the complexities of our cases, you know, just because, and I feel like, you know, when it comes to business, it's all about numbers, you know, of course, like numbers equals profit equals all the things. But at the same time, like a client can be seen for 15 hours a week and be your toughest client.
Easily.
And then you might have a client who's 25 hours a week and they're super by the book.
It's a cake.
Like super, super like DTC kind of kid. You know, that's all different. And I feel like, you know, companies do have to understand, like, you know, this isn't like, if we're, for example, refusing to provide service to a kid, it is not because of anything more than just we need to have the capacity. We need to have the professional competence to work with this particular client, as opposed to we're just going to take this kid because they're a few billable hours and they can make us money and they can, you know, help us keep our business afloat. You know, that's just,
That's when it becomes risky. Like, what does it say? Like in Harry Potter, Hermione tells Ron that his emotional range is a teaspoon. I'm like, when we hit our teaspoon and we are, our emotional range is dipped out, we are risky. We are dangerous providers, because that's when you start cutting corners. You lose your compassion. That's one of the first things that goes when you're burnt out, is your ability to empathize and have compassion, because you don't have the space for it. You're just trying to survive. You can't get creative. You can't come up with unique programming. You're drowning. And the last thing you want to do when someone's drowning and they're asking you for help is be like, but can you take on this other client for me? Like, no.
No, I can't. In case you haven't noticed, I'm dying over here.
Thanks for the lifeboat and the buoy.
Yeah, exactly.
Push my head under the water, why don't you?
Oh, my gosh. Exactly. And that's why, like, when I speak with, you know, BCBA candidates and I'm, like, working with them,
I'm really trying to hone in on, self-advocacy and being able to express, whether or not they feel comfortable with something. Now, some of it does come to a cost because some of it ends up coming to me. But that being said, I feel more proud when they express their autonomy and express their need to do that.
You never want to hear on the backside from a staff that I remember crying to my boss because I was like, I'm at the end of my rope. Like, I've applied 4 times since I've worked here to quit and I haven't pulled the plug yet. And I remember being like, this job is taxing. I'm 100% an introvert, which blows people's minds because I'm very social. But yeah. I remember telling her, I am wearing a mask all day, every day in this job. Because this is kind of the person I need to be there for these people. And while it is a part of me, it's not all of me. And I remember like crying and being like, I'm losing myself to this job. And she was like, I wish you would have told me this. I don't ever want you to get to that point. And as a supervisor, like I told my BT today, I don't want you losing sleep over this. And I wish someone would have told me that when I was new of like, don't put all this on your shoulders because you internalize everything. I had a dream about a client I worked with 6 years ago last night, like wondering what they were up to. Like I know, isn't that crazy? It's like, you don't ever truly let go of some of the stuff because it almost becomes part of your life and your past. And I don't ever want to hear my like mentees that I work with or my BCBAs that I'm coaching or like my people who work under me be like, I was afraid to tell you I was struggling, because we have, I think, all felt that pressure, especially in our field of it's okay to not be okay, but you need to tell somebody that. And I always want people to feel comfortable having that conversation, but it comes to being open. And if we shut people down when they're in those times of need and we punish them for expressing those needs, we failed. We're failing them. Mm-hmm.
We failed as mentors. We didn't just fail as behavior analysts. We failed as people there.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that I'm like trying to really try to teach as much as possible too. Cause it's like, again, your voice matters. You and I, like a tech and a BCBA or BCABA, have different types of burnout, I feel, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I keep in mind when it comes to my technicians is, like they're doing all the physical work. I have a lot of
tech repetitive. Yeah. It reminds me of like factory work. Yeah. Not like that. People say like, oh, as a BCBA, I misdirect work. No, I'm not that BCBA. I like training and coaching and mentoring. That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
RBT life, while I do love working with clients, became like pencil pusher to me, where it was like, this is not fun anymore. I'm doing the same thing every single day. It feels like a means to an end. And I could not wait to become a BCBA, like just to get out of that. And I see that with my students I've worked with all the time. And then their bosses get mad at them. I'm like, you remember that feeling. Don't hate on them because they're at that point where they want more or something different.
It's exactly why I say like, humble yourself. Those 4 or 5 letters doesn't mean shit.
It means you're at step one all over again. You're not at the top of the staircase. You're at the bottom again.
You went from being at the top to the bottom, but in a different capacity, you know? So know where you came from. Know your history. You were once in this position of working with clients and getting the shit kicked out of you or spit on or slapped or your hair pulled or, all of the things. You were once there. So don't hate on your BC, your RBT or your BT for, them feeling burnt out. And that's something that, again, like I cannot stress enough because there are so many non-humble analysts out there.
And I talked to all my BTs. I actually started, being not just a supervisor and being a mentor, but I start with all of my BTs. Like, I just had a new girl start with me like 2 weeks ago. And one of the very first conversations we have is like a mental health almost of this job, especially when they've never worked in the field. This job is hard. And I don't expect you to be perfect. I just expect you to be able to learn with me because we are a team on this. And I give them a worksheet to fill out to be like, to do the same things that's on my burnout checklist. What makes you happy? Make sure you're scheduling times in to do those things for yourself because you're going to face the same burnout feelings I've faced. And I talk to them about what are your stress signals that go off in your body and in your mind when you're starting to hit those points. Start recognizing them now because they will find you at one point or another in this job. And I want you to be looking out for them so we can address things before you get there. Because no one told me that as a BT. No one told me that as a BCBA. And I was like, we should have one. I feel like we should have mental health therapy. Like, we should have people to talk to us on staff. Like, you passed your BCBA exam. Here's a therapist.
Yeah. Facts.
You're a human. Here's a therapist. Realistically, yeah. I think is yeah, what we exactly. need. And I have those conversations. And I make it a regular thing. And I check in. And I say, how are you doing? Are you okay? Yeah. Like, don't go home and think about this at 9 p.m. at night, worrying if you're taking your frequency data right. I'll put a little trend line, an event line, and say, we fixed data correction errors. We can fix it. Like, don't think you have to be perfect. And I don't know. I was just talking to a friend about this literally yesterday. Training has gone out the window for new BTs. I felt like I had great training when I was a BT in like 2016. And I get BTs now and I'm like, no one has told you and taught you anything. Yeah. And that's not your fault. Like we'll get to what we need to get to, but I'm not going to expect you to be an expert at your job on day one. Because if I do, what's wrong with me? Like, that's not your fault and you're going to be punished for that. And I don't believe in that. I'll help you get there. And then we'll take this together as human beings and we'll figure it out.
Exactly. Before we go into my next comment, I want to go ahead and do the first code word. The first code word is flow. Something that Megan has already said, the word flow, F-L-O-W. That is the word flow. I want to comment on the fact that you do mental health, like almost like mental health check-ins, also like, you know, a sheet. And I think that's such a brilliant idea. And, you know, I think that we should be doing that more often. And I think, unfortunately, it's sort of gone out the window because, again, like we're looking at, we have to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
We have to hit productivity levels. And it's like, you know, because for me personally, like I care so deeply about the people that I work with. I want them to know because we have treatment team meetings every single week.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where I will say, like, you know, hey, it's okay if you're feeling this way. It's okay if you're feeling, you know, burnt out, if you're feeling, you know, lost, if you're feeling like anything.
Yeah.
You know, I just started potty training with one of my kids and I had to literally reach out to both of the technicians working with this kid and be like, you guys, it is okay if you miss a data opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
End of the world if you miss one data point for a man or for an action or whatever. Like, you are doing I think potty training, in my personal opinion, is the hardest intervention.
Yeah, and potty training and elopers, like hardcore elopers, that's end game. That's all you're doing is those two things. That's it.
Exactly. So it's so funny because, like, you know, they'll kind of get on themselves and I'm like, guys, stop it.
Like, the pressure is real for them just as much as for us. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's what I mean, like, by the difference in burnout too, you know, their burnout is more physical. It's more taxing. It's more like client face-to-face burnout, where with us, it's like the burnout of having so many clients to work with, having to see all of our clients, having to see all our techs, having to do all the parent trainings, having to do all the staff trainings, like that gets overwhelming.
You've got 14 hats as a BCBA and every hat is like got three things spinning on the top of it, and you have to pick which one's about to blow up first.
Exactly.
And hope you guessed correctly.
Exactly. Like, if you've gone to, like, Cirque du Soleil, and they have, like, the spinning plate.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking about.
That is me as a BCBA. And that, you know, and it's so, like, I have to be a teacher, a mentor, a, you know, a
counselor.
I have to be all of those things in one body. And
you got to be fun as shit when you're there.
True. You have to tap into being a fun ass person. You know, sometimes you're going back to being five. Sometimes you're talking to them, you know, at like 10, 12 years old, and you're trying to be as, you know, on your shit as possible, you know? So it's so like sad to hear about burnout, but then at the same time, it's like, how can you not feel burnt out when you have 19 hats, 18 spinning plates, and a dumpster fire just waiting to happen, you know?
Yeah. And it's a disservice to us. And I think going into like what we've kind of talked about before is we're not set up for this. Like, that's kind of how my business all came about. Was I was really lucky to come from a background where I had been doing scheduling, or I was always managing like leadership roles, and I was in charge of a lot of different things. So I got really used to, at a really young age, healthy or not, managing a lot of moving parts. And that was just a part of my life. So I was really fortunate when I came into a BCBA role, because as you know, and you don't, unless you have a fantastic student experience, you don't get to see a lot of the real of BCBA life. You see the supervision side, but you don't see everything else under the umbrella. So when you start your first job as a BCBA, there's all these expectations on you to juggle 14, not only 14 different things, four or five different people or 10 people or however many clients and staff and people you have to keep up with and their families and like everything else. But you're not taught how to do that, how to prioritize, how to figure out how to use your time effectively. You're being told you're to make 40 hours a week become 60 magically, and you're put in this situation where you're not coached on those things, but you're just expected to know how to do them and know how to do them well from day one. And I think that's what goes into that like culture shock almost as being a new BCBA, is you're still trying to figure out how to balance all this, because you've not always had this level of tasks to keep up with, and you don't have time to figure it out. So I always tell like students, now is the time to practice that, to start thinking about these things when it doesn't, like, for lack of better words, it doesn't matter. You're not actually impacting the like black or white of something. You're in that gray area, and this is the time to start getting these things antecedently in place, because once you're in it, it's better to, I used to have a social studies teacher who would tell us the best time to study is 10 years ago. The second best time is now. And I think about that all the time. Like, the best time to learn these coping skills, these organization skills, is before you become a BCBA, because time dwindles quickly once you are one, to be able to change it on the fly as you're going.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, health implications really do matter here. And, you know, you do have to be able to maintain yourself and maintain exactly like how to go about, you know, your burnout, but also meeting, you know, those, again, the productivity, because that's unfortunately a buzzword that happens to be, you know, happens to be flying practically. But, you know, you mentioned that's how you got to the start of your company. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your company for those of us who have not heard of what you do outside of, you know, your BCBA work. Tell us a little bit about like your company and how you help other BCBAs with productivity, with burnout, all of those things.
Yeah. So it started, when I was on this journey as my personal BCBA, I was putting into place different practices. I went through a phase of being, and I kind of still am, a huge personal development junkie. I love listening to podcasts. I love learning about productivity. I was like definitely that person who followed like the old school YouTube productivity people. Like, you're going to show me how to make a Google Calendar. I've seen that video. It's probably saved in my old favorites somewhere. And I liked that because it married, like, my creative side that I was missing out on at work. I felt like I didn't get to be creative, and I have this whole artsy side that I didn't get to use that much. So by creating these different organizers and, like, adding the little things to make my calendar, like, color-coded for my clients, not only helped me to visualize and be able to manage my role better, but it made me happy just to look at it and be like, it's not 14 million blue blocks. They're all pretty. And that little joy made my life easier. And so I started just building up more and more of these things. I started helping the clinic I was at reorganize and make systems for the processes we had, because I was like, and I tell my clients this all the time, our jobs are very repetitive. You don't always recognize it because each client is different, but the flow we follow is 90% the same every single time. So when you can really grasp your head around that, you can turn it into a step-by-step thing that you do, a workflow, a standard of practice, and then you can save yourself time doing the legwork every single time. So I started really getting into that, sharing it with other people. I posted in a Facebook group about an organizer, or somebody needed an organizer, and I was like, well, I don't have that for me, but I can make this for them in like 5 minutes. And I posted about it, and like 100 people were commenting and being like, I need this. And I was like, wow, this is a problem that a lot of people in our field are facing. And I didn't realize that, because it wasn't something, it was something that kind of came naturally to me. So I was like, okay, how can I take this like cool superpower I have and use it to help other people not have such a shitty work experience? Like, I want their lives to be better. I want them to be less stressed. I don't want them to make the same mistakes I did. And it kind of just grew from there, of making templates for people to use to help, like, put their thoughts in action, give themselves a plan, and like streamline their stuff, to knowing, I knew full well that that was a Band-Aid. And I was like, I can't talk to 100 of you today, but I can give you somewhere to start that you can learn and grow off of, to it becoming, I held like group training workshops, to now I have my ACE provider and I can hold CEU events, and I do one-on-one mentorship with BCBAs who are like, I have a hard time with this. Maybe it's executive functioning issues. Maybe it's they have a role that's intense and they have a lot of hats and they don't have support. So sometimes I'm a sounding board and we work through and create different flows for their job to make their lives easier. Like, sorry, my dog, I don't know if you can hear, my dogs are losing their mind. So sometimes it's like we sit down and we make a form for them together in our meetings, and we go, okay, you're having a hard time with client intake and onboarding new staff, what can we add in to make that simpler for you? Other times it's, we work on how to make a more efficient schedule. And there's a lot of like life coaching that goes into it that I didn't expect, of just having the same conversations that you and I are having, of what do you want out of your life? How do you feel about your role? Where do you want to go? And how can we start chipping away and make a plan using the same skills that we use in our practice in ABA on ourselves in a lens of productivity? So making sure things that are important, taking a break is important. Why? Because our brains need to stop. If we don't have these pauses, we can't continue to think creatively. That's why we always get great ideas in like the shower, because, or at night, right before you go to bed, because your brain has stopped thinking on stuff for a while and it can like wander in the back of its mind to those little things that you forgot about. And so we talk through those things, how to set boundaries, how to advocate for yourself while also helping them make the most of their time. Because productive does not mean more work. It means doing your work in a way that's going to save you time. And I always tell people, I think I say in one of my workshops, that should not be and companies will try to take advantage of it. If you are saving time because you're working more efficiently, that does not mean you're open for more work. That means you have earned that time back to breathe, to actually sit and eat your lunch, to research, to take a workshop, to expand your knowledge and growth. Like I say, it's like when you put a dollar into a vending machine and you get two bags of cookies instead of one. You're not going to go to the store owner and be like, excuse me, you accidentally gave me an extra bag. No, you're like, woo, universe win, two bags of cookies. So stop going to your boss and saying, excuse me, I've become more efficient. Please give me another client. No, yeah. Like that's just stupid. And we don't even realize that we're doing that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's beautiful that you even like, mention this too, because again, you know, we look at ourselves and we're told, oh, work smarter, not harder, but then we work smarter and then we get, you know, rewarded with our
with more
rewarded
work.
By getting more work, you know, it's like, yeah. It's like, it's so backwards. It is mm-hmm. so backwards. And, you know, again, like I've even had conversations with some of my technicians about like hobbies.
Yeah. Oh,
fucking hobby. Don't make this job your life.
No, have 10 hobbies. I pick up so many hobbies. I feel like I am like a hobby gremlin and I love it. And that's what I think keeps me feeling balanced, and they change all the time. But it's like, that's what's exciting to me at the moment. It was like reading, and I was in like a huge reading nook there for a while. And then it was gardening. Sometimes it's Netflix. Like it just goes through different stuff, and figuring out what those different things are help you be rounded and like almost put a protection bubble on you from the day to day. So like you can, your bubble wrap might start having a couple things popped, but if you don't put it on, then you just like face planted off a cliff. So you need to be able to like protect yourself in that way. And I have like the biggest pet peeve for going above and beyond. That phrase makes me want to like vomit. Because I was, and I think that this is a major problem in society, we're ingrained that above and beyond needs to happen at all times. And I know for me, it was like as early as middle school, like being coached in, you need to be well-rounded. You need to play sports. You need to have a job. You need to be in extracurriculars. You need to have leadership positions to get into a good college. Then in college, it was like, you need to get good grades. You need to have a good internship to get a good job. Then it was like, you get to the job and they're like, you, and I don't know if this is just from generations above us coming down and telling us these things or like where the pressure comes from of like, you need to get a good job, and at that job, you want to get promoted, or you want to be seen as competent, so you need to take on extra work. You need to say yes to these extra tasks, and I did that. I did that as the new BCBA. I led diversity and leadership workshops at 7 o'clock at night after the workday that was not paid.
Girl.
So... yeah. So I was like, I felt like honored because I was recommended for this role. And I was like, oh, ego stroke. Yes. Like you think I am a great talker. Awesome. I love having these conversations, and I did it. And I realized, jokes on Megan, we weren't giving classes to other people. We were just assigning them all to her. So I was working 7 o'clock at night meetings more than anybody else. And I finally denied one, and they said, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm not available. This is after work hours. You're not asking me. And I finally, like, I liked leading those meetings. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But I came to the point that I was like, what am I doing? I'm saying yes to things because I think it will look good. Who am I trying to impress? And I got to the point where I was like, stop trying to impress anybody. The only person that matters is you, and that you know you're doing a good job. In your job, you don't need this external validation because it's fake at this point, and I'm being taken advantage of, and I did not realize it. So I said, no, I can no longer do this. You need to give it else, put it on somebody else's plate. I started saying no to going to after work social events. One, because I'm not that person, but I was like, I need to protect my peace. And I don't really want to go to a cocktail hour holiday brunch or whatever it is, because that's not fun. And most of us aren't friends. We're just coworkers. So yeah. I'm going to do something else that's going to help me show up better to work than to do that. And it was so hard to break out of that. And I still have to remind myself regularly, like, you're not asking too much. You're not being unrealistic. You're just going against the norm of what everybody and their brother wants you to be or thinks that you owe them or that they deserve from you. And that's not okay.
Facts. I mean, even when you said, you know, not going above and beyond, you know, there was a quote that immediately, I script this every so often. So for me, there's three places that I'm not going to this year. Above and beyond, out of my way, or the extra mile. And let me tell you, that quote changed my life.
I need a t-shirt.
That quote changed my life. Like, when I heard that, I was like, you know what? And that's kind of like, those are situations that I've ran into even like present moment. You know, there have been times where I've been like, you know what? I put my blood, sweat, tears, and emotions
literally
into this. And the thank you I get is more work. Mm-hmm. The thank you I get is, oh, we recognize that you're great at this, but here, you do this. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I found it was always a slap in the face. So I think that this, it's not like the quiet quitting thing, the like whatever the like millennial phrase is that was popular for a while. It was, I'm doing my job well. I'm not going to like skimp and not do my job. That's not me. But you're asking beyond my role of me, and I'm no longer giving it to you because, like you said, when I was doing all those things, it was not reinforced. Realistically, it was punished. And I realized I'm going out of my way to put all of these things into place that's taking my personal energy. It's sucking and draining me. And what for what? Like, there's nothing that I get out of this. And my coworker, who is doing bare minimum, we're paid the same amount. We have the same amount of like everything. So I was like, no, I'm going to be the best bare minimum employee I can be. Not in a bad way, but like, I can be a better supervisor by doing that. I've really learned to prioritize. There's a saying, and it's from business podcasts. I highly recommend anybody in this field start listening to like podcasts and reading about like productivity and stuff outside of our field, because it changed my mind and my mindset and how I approach life. And it's that 80% of the tasks that we do. So we've got 100% of like what we work on. Only 20% of that actually makes a real impact. And I was like, okay, yeah. Like, I think that applies to most of life. And I was like, okay, I'm going to spend the very precious time I have in my work week doing those 20% tasks. And then some of those other 80% things need done, but I'm not going to give it A++ level work. I'm going to pass. I'm going to give it that C level work, which is super hard for me to do. And I'm going to put it on a rainy day list because I have a hard time just deleting it from my mind. So on a day when all my kids cancel and I'm like, what do I do? I pull out my rainy day list and I say, here's all the things I'd love to do if I had free time. Yeah. Today I've got the free time. I'm just going to tackle the first thing on my list.
Exactly. It's how we show up better as supervisors. It's how we show up better as employees. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, why are we bending ourselves over and over just so that way we can get a slap in the face and, you know, oh, my counterpart is being paid the same amount, even though I'm doing like 50 times the work that they're doing. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You know, bet. Or I guess that's what the kids say, bet, or like
no cap.
No cap. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, at the end of the day, and I really hope that especially like future BCBAs and future BCABAs are listening to this particular part, but it's like, I want you guys to realize that you only have one life to live. And it sounds so fucking cliche.
It's so true. You never know what you're getting. Like, I saw something today that was like, if you were to be, if, what's today? June 26th. June 26th, 2025. If you were feeling and doing exactly what you were doing today, how would you feel about that? And I was like, oh, right to the gut. If yeah. I was still where I was at, say, 2021, yeah. I would not work in this field anymore. And yes. I think that I took 6 months off to do my business full time, which is hard to do, by the way. Whew. Because I was doing it all while working full time for about a year, and it was super slow process, and it was a lot. And as I talk to a lot of business owners, when you find something you really love, it makes working in work you don't really love 10 times harder. So I was having that burnout of, I like this. I like having these conversations. I like coaching my BCBAs. I like sometimes doing the workshops. depends on how many times I've done it. And that really filled my cup up of the science versus some of the stuff that I didn't like. And the more I did those things that set me on fire, the more those other things really just like broke my soul. And yeah. I was like, if I was in those same shoes, I don't think I could do this. And it took that 6 months of really asking myself, like, I would say there's no way in hell I would be doing this for 10 years if you would have asked me then. I still question it because I think there's a lot that needs to change. And I'm excited more people are branching out and doing their own things and starting their own businesses and expanding the science, because we need that in order to survive, I think. But I was like, those 6 months coming back in April and going back to the field part time was initially something I did not want to do, because it was like I was jaded from positions in the past. And then I came back and I was like, I have more control. I'm in charge of a lot more things. I can make my own clinical decisions. And I am excited to go to work. I have so much fun. Like, I have a little gratitude. Like, I can show you because you can see it. Podcast listeners, I am showing Michelle a notebook. and I have been tracking, like, June every day, like, something I'm grateful for. And for today, it was the smile on a mom's face that I work with, of, like, just understanding that somebody's there for her and, like, having a parent training moment. And I love working with my families and I love teaching my staff, but I got to that point where the expectations were so high that I didn't love it anymore. And I was like, why would I do this? And I think that I really think part-time work, contract work, and just thinking about that, because I never talked to anybody about that, is something I just wish that as a new BCBA or as a student, that my mentors, my BCBA supervisors would have taught me these things and would have had these hard conversations about what to expect, how to know you're at risk, how to know you're being taken advantage of, besides just freaking task list and like the exam prep, because that's a third of what we do, if that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I want to go ahead and talk about our second code word of the day. We've kind of talked about this, and that word is shift. That is S-H-I-F-T. That is the word shift. Megan, this has been such a beautiful conversation. I mean, like, you know, we talk about it all the time, but at the same time, we don't really talk about it enough, as weird as that really sounds. But that being said, you know, I really want to like challenge my listeners here who are not BCBAs to know your voice and, you know, to know that you only have yourself. You only have, you know, your one life. And being a BC little a BA doesn't necessarily mean that you need to make that your personality. You don't need to go above and beyond, out of your way, and the extra mile. You know, it's okay to take, you know, time to decompress and breathe and actually like have a work-life balance and when I say work-life balance, I don't mean, you know, like, you know, you're off the internet for the, you're off the work thing for the day, but then you're going to go to your phone and still somehow respond to texts, you know?
Yes.
Like baby BCBA, Michelle, let me tell you, there were days where I worked until 2 o'clock in the fucking morning working on.
Oh, no, Michelle.
I know. This was me when I first supervised. I kid you not, Megan. I remember at one job in particular, I had a job where I worked until 2 o'clock in the morning because I was dealing with a re-off situation. Mm-hmm. And I remember actually like billing to that time. And instead of being...
Did your boss say, what the heck?
No, my boss actually gave me 4 hours of PTO and was literally like, oh, you're doing a great job going above and beyond. And I got 4 hours of PTO. And at first, oh my God. So me being, you know, myself, I'm at first being like, oh, that's so great. Thank you so much. This is such an honor. Then I realized, what the fuck?
How messed up that is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It took me having to go through that. And, you know, so that being said, you know I have my personal message, but what would you say to anybody who is going into this career and, you know, is trying to become a BCBA and just kind of understanding of what to expect when it comes to like your mental health, when it comes to, you know, work life things, essentially? Yeah.
I would say there's so many things I want to say. I need to do a series on this on my Instagram. If you don't follow it, it's at The Organized Analyst, because you gave me the idea when we talked about what this whole conversation was going to be about, of like lessons. And I think I had one post of like lessons I would tell myself if I was starting over. And I think one of the big ones would be like, don't rush it. I remember being like, and I see this all the time, of how quickly can I, what's the fastest grad school program? What's the fastest I can get my hours? And that was the biggest mistake I think I ever made, was trying to get there. And it was because of RBT burnout. I was so done mental, like I worked with a lot of physical clients. I was like at the end of my rope, and financially I was like, I don't make a lot of money and my pay can disappear. And I remember being like, I need this on so many levels. And I think that that's a whole different topic about financial stuff, because I think that that's something that we all need to have in place so that we can protect ourselves. But don't rush it, because when you're a student, when you're considering it, this is the time to practice all these soft skills and get a good mentor. Like, it doesn't, your BCBA you're working with doesn't have to be your only mentor. Like, really start talking to BCBAs at other companies, start making a wide web of connections, talk to, and I feel like a lot of the BCBAs who are on social media will chat with you. If you come message me in my DMs, I'm like voice messaging people like left and right, life advice, like recommendations if they're in a crazy experience at their job. I had like, just slow down and be a person with it. I think that making the connections and just being there for the journey, if you're not so stressed about getting to the outcome, even when you become a BCBA, the process is what's going to teach you what to do. There's signs there. We just don't always listen to them because we're listening to all the like other input that's coming in that I knew in my gut so many times I was in a bad situation and I didn't slow down and think of an exit plan or make a list of like what to do different. And I created, I think it's called like new BCBA roadmap or something. It's a freebie on my website. It's almost like a journal of questions I wish I would have asked myself from being a student passing the exam to becoming a BCBA, to help myself envision what I wanted going forward, what my boundaries were going to be, what was important to me. Because if I didn't do that, it was going to get created for me by wherever I worked for. And that's dangerous. And so I guess that would be my guidance, is like, talk to as many people as you can, see as many things as you can, and go slow in your time.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful message. I really, truly believe it, you know. And I mean, I'm right there with you. you know, with all of those things. I mean, I definitely wish I could go back and, you know, tell myself to slow down. And also, unfortunately, I did not have a good mentorship experience. That's yeah. something that I like still sometimes think about. But that being said, you know, I know, like, personally, I wish I could go back and tell myself, like, it's okay to seek out other mentorship.
Because you feel guilty that you don't, that you're like, I'm loyal to this person. They are my mentor. Yeah. The power dynamic struggle is very interesting.
It's awful. It's awful. especially when it's like, you know, and I truly, like, I have since, like, forgiven this person, but because they did apologize to me, they took accountability for how they treated me when I was being mentored by them. But I say that in air quotes, but at the same time, it's like, shit, I wish I would have just gone back and have been like, Michelle, get the fuck out of there. And like, you know, she ended up dropping me as a mentee because I wasn't like following through with my end of the bargain, I guess. And it's like, but you also were criticizing my every move.
That should be a red flag for her that something's wrong.
Facts. Exactly. So, you know, to me, it's like, I wish I could go back and say to myself when I was first a baby BCBA, you know, seek out mentorship, you know, not just with one person. Like, I know that yeah. I have certain BCBA candidates who work with me, and it's like, I am one BCBA out of like over 100,000 BCBAs in this fucking country. Like, yes. Please seek out mentorship, not just from me. Seek it from anybody. Seek it from somebody who has, you know, different types of experience. Because believe it or not, I don't know everything. Just because I'm autistic doesn't mean I don't know everything, you know? So, yeah, I appreciate you saying that. So, but again, this was such a beautiful conversation, Megan. I'm so happy that you came on tonight and we got to talk and dive deeply into this. And I would love for you to just tell us, like, where we can find you. I know you kind of already talked about it, but where can we find you?
You can find me. I'm most prominent on Instagram. I think I'm funny. I have a cute little section of the internet on my Instagram, which is The Organized Analyst. And you can find me there. And then I have a website at theorganizedanalyst.com where I have like different resources, and I've got my CEU workshops on there and just tons of different kind of cool stuff to look through. But I'm always down to chat and work with people. I do offer one-on-one mentorship. I don't call it supervision. It's more like consulting. So I'm not going to help you with your BB map or your task list skills, because that is not something that brings me joy. So I am all about helping you find your organizational groove, using your time efficiently, creating systems that work for you, because just like with our clients, organization and how we manage and think through things is not one size fits all. What works for me might not work for you. So I help BCBAs and even some business owners find their personal groove and learn to evaluate that and make it work going forward so they can continue to feel successful in that. So it's at The Organized Analyst on Instagram or theorganizedanalyst.com.
Love it. Love it. Well, thank you so much, Megan. I so appreciate your time spent with me. And thank you everyone who tuned in tonight. I have been your host, Michelle, and I will see you on the next one. Bye.